It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. As Edward Snowden, the ex-NSA contractor who leaked government documents to the press, continues to seek asylum in Russia, the debate continues here in America about whether Snowden is a hero or a traitor. One man who can relate to the plight of Edward Snowden as he remains holed up in Moscow deciding what to do next is James Holzrichter, a whistleblower himself who worked as internal auditor for Northrop Grumman's Defense Systems Division. He discovered the company was falsely inflating its material costs to increase its reimbursement from the government. The experience would change his life forever and inspire his new book, A Just Cause, a true story of courage, hope, and the integrity of the American dream. He joins us by phone from the Chicago area. James Holzrichter, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, good afternoon, Paul, and it's glad to be on your radio station.
And if you'd like to join the conversation and weigh in on the Snowden case, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. You can email us at esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. What are your thoughts about Edward Snowden and what he's done? Do you think he's a hero or a traitor? 412-246-2002, the number to call. James Holzrichter, your experience parallels Mr. Snowden's in many ways, but unlike Snowden, you were a corporate whistleblower as opposed to a government whistleblower. When you confronted your former employer, Northrop Grumman, with your findings about the company falsely inflating its material costs to increase reimbursement they were getting from the government, what happened?
Well, of course, they denied any of the wrongdoing, and in fact, we continued the case for about 17 years. I was working and cooperating with federal agents for about a year to a year and a half undercover before I was discovered to be cooperating in the federal investigation. And of course, once that happened, there were things that took place within Northrop to make sure that I didn't bring any more information to the attention of the government.
What made you blow the whistle? I mean, could you have just gone along with what the company was doing, and if they were caught, use the excuse that you were just following orders?
Well, you would think so. But what happened is as I was becoming more and more aware of some of the things that we had alleged in our complaint that came out in 1989, I didn't know who to trust or who to go to with the information. I was reporting the information internally to my supervisor, and even some of the information I brought to Northrop's own internal security. But rather than to correct the situation, I started to be involved or become involved, or they tried to pull me in to actually do some of the manipulation on the computer system to do away with the information that I was finding. I was at home one evening when I received a phone call from an individual who was identifying himself as a federal agent. His name is Richard Zott. And he had identified himself as such, and I had told him, well, I have no way to verify that you're a federal agent. You could very well be a foreign agent trying to get classified documentation because, Paul, remember, I was working for the defense contractor that was tasked with the development and the production of what was then so top secret Congress didn't even admit it existed, and that was the stealth bomber, along with other defense contractor information. And so I just wasn't going to speak to somebody who just came out of the blue and identified himself as a federal agent. And he says that he would provide the credentials when he came to see me. And I said I still couldn't verify his credentials. And he says, I'll tell you what's going to happen, Jim. He says, you're going to go into Northrop tomorrow and tell them that I called you. And they're going to have you in front of their corporate lawyers within 5 minutes. And they're going to scare you. And you're not going to talk to me. And I'm going to put you in jail. And I says, well, what time can you be here tomorrow? You have to understand whistleblowers are faced with a dilemma of trust, and sometimes the decisions they make are basically the lesser of two evils. So I chose to speak with the federal agent.
We're speaking with corporate whistleblower James Holzrichter. Again, his new book is A Just Cause, a true story of courage, hope, and the integrity of the American dream. It doesn't sound, Mr. Holzrichter, as though you had much choice here.
Generally, whistleblowers don't. they don't have a lot of choice, but they're not aware, too, of the ramifications of the choices that they do make. And sometimes they don't consider the other people in their life, their loved ones, their significant others. But in actuality, this journey isn't taken alone by the whistleblower. And in fact, that's rather well-defined in a just cause of what whistleblowers face, of what they endure, and also some of the resources they may not be aware of where they can turn to for some help.
So there are the consequences that a whistleblower faces. And even though, as we've established, you really didn't have a lot of choices here, you didn't have a lot of leeway in the process of making a decision that was ultimately going to have a profound impact on the remainder of your life. Nevertheless, did you consider the consequences and what might happen to you if you took this path of no return?
Not really, Paul, because there's nothing really out there to lay out just what that course could be, what the repercussions are. It was solely guesswork. You have to remember that in 1986, the False Claims Act had just been given its teeth back, and so it was a rather new statute again. So I was even unaware that that even existed. So I didn't know what was going to happen or where this journey was going to take me and my family.
So if you take that step, is there any turning back?
Sometimes no. Sometimes no. I remember that during my deposition that I was just overwhelmed. My deposition went on for 8.5 days, and that was before the new federal laws of civil procedure. So I went through 8.5 grueling days of badgering by their lead attorneys, and he asked me, and I just says, I just want this to be over. And he says, well, all you have to do is drop your allegations, and it's bigger than that. It grows. It takes on a life of its own, and you're swept along. You might step into that stream of coming forward, and soon it's up over your head, and you're swimming along and being swept along, too. So sometimes the choices are taken away from you after you've made the decision to, as it were, blow the whistle.
Knowing what you knew, could you have lived with not divulging the information about Northrop Grumman inflating its material costs to get more money unjustly from the government?
Well, Paul, that's an internal question that each whistleblower needs to ask themselves. I just know that for myself, something kept coming back to me that was at my core, and it's something my father had told me when I was younger. And he asked me the question all the time. He says, when is it ever wrong to do the right thing? And that's a personal question for each person they need to ask themselves. And for myself, I just had to do what I did. It would be rather selfish of me to, if I had known at the time the ramifications to my family and basically saying, I didn't care, I need to do this. But that's not what happened. And for predominantly most whistleblowers, that's the case. They are caught in this quandary of doing the right thing to protect either the physical fisc or people's lives. And it's not just a matter of what they feel that somebody's doing wrong. There's actual issues or safety as well as finances are concerned.
So what can you expect if you're discovered to be a whistleblower? What happens?
Generally, the first thing that happens is isolation. And you're cut off, as it were, and your spheres of trust that you build throughout your life, of who you can trust, your education that you might have had, those all go by the wayside. And you have to be able to redefine yourself and maybe to seek another course, as it were. And A Just Cause has a picture of a bridge on there, and there's a purpose for that, because you have to build that bridge, as it were, for two purposes. First is to build a bridge and get over it. And the second thing is that you also have to reconnect. You have to redefine yourself, and that's okay to do that and to be able to move on. And so that's what I help people to do with the mentoring that I do through Taxpayers Against Fraud.
Right, and I want to get into some of that as we go along here, but I think it's important for you to share, you know, the ramifications of what you did when it comes to uncovering fraud or impropriety. In your case, how did it impact your life?
Well, what happened is I sought employment within the aerospace industry and continued to do so in a high-tech environment, and I received over 400 rejection letters from different corporations who wanted
400.
Nothing to do. 400. And they wanted nothing to do with me. In fact, that was in the time when people used to actually send you a no-thank-you letter when you submitted a resume, which they don't do anymore now, but that's basically a lost art. And so what happened is we found ourselves unemployed, unemployable, and slowly going through everything we had worked for in our lives, both my wife and myself and our children, to the point of where we lost everything. And we wound up homeless, and we were living in a homeless shelter. And we were working 7 different part-time jobs to try to make ends meet and still receiving public aid. And this is the struggle that we had until finally I could then re-educate myself. I took a position with the Chicago Tribune as an independent contractor in distribution. And from there, I worked the next 10 years, 7 days a week, 365 days a year without a day off while the case was being prosecuted in the courts. And after 10 years, after the case had originally been declined by the Department of Justice, something that had never happened in the history of the United States took place. And the Department of Justice decided to intervene in the case after 10 years after declination. And we went forward from there. And there was just a cast of characters that was a perfect storm, as it were, to turn this case around and come to a successful conclusion of where the government recovered $134 million. And it was just some remarkable events that took place. There was also a time that during the deposition of our expert witness, who came into the case was General Charles Chuck Henry. And he was responsible for the logistics of Desert Storm. So he brought him into our case as our expert witness on government contracting. And he had said that if he had been aware of what was going on at the facility where I was working at, he would have started an investigation into what was going on, and probably the contract might have been canceled for cause. And he would have led that investigation to do that. And it was about 2 weeks after that took place, Paul, that the front right tire of my car came off while I was driving down the road. And I contacted Richard Zott, the federal agent, to let him know, and he sent an agent to walk with me down the highway, and we found all 5 of those bolts that had sheared off on a tire, and they were all the way out to the very ends of the stems. Well, you can maybe consider that might be an accident, but 3 weeks after that happened to me, it happened to my son, right front tire sheared off, and 2 weeks after that, it happened to my eldest daughter. That was a message.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is corporate whistleblower James Holzrichter, who's written a book about his experiences called A Just Cause, a true story of courage, hope, and the integrity of the American dream. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. The email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. What are your thoughts about Edward Snowden? Do you think he's a hero or a traitor? 412-246-2002. James Holzrichter, do you think that Snowden is a hero or a traitor?
Well, that's a question that many people have asked me, Paul. And I don't know all of the facts that are contained in the events that he had done or the information that he might have taken out. I know there's a recent poll that's out right now that 55% of America is saying he's a hero.
According to an NBC News poll.
Sure. Yes, it is. And also, actually, some lesser number, because there's about a 17% of that poll that has not made any comment. And in regards to that, one thing that I can say with 100% certainty is that he's in trouble. And as you saw on that NBC interview the other night, when he stood there and he says he's lost everything, he's lost his family. And in that sense, he has a lot in common with what happens to whistleblowers. That's one of the things that happens. They lose their family, Paul. I've mentored several dozen whistleblowers around the country, And one that I'm mentoring right now, in fact, is living out of his car. He's lost his wife and his children, and he's hiding from the people he blew the whistle on.
And he's lost his wife and children because he's isolated, or because they, sometimes happens in these cases, a spouse says, I did not sign up for this, and you may be on the run, but I'm not.
Absolutely. That's what happened with this situation, the spouse's career is also damaged in these situations, and that's with intent. That's to send a message to those who might have integrity or people who have ethics, as it were. And I like to coin a phrase that I've made. It's called an ethictician, and that's a person who has ethics and actually practices it. So in that sense, that's what happens to a lot of whistleblowers. And just what is a whistleblower, and how do you define what a whistleblower is? You have to remember that for purposes of the discussion, Paul, the historic purpose or the reason where this term came from is, do you remember in the United Kingdom or England when the bobbies were, they didn't have weapons or
right.
firearms?
They had no guns.
They were issued a whistle. And for the purpose of that whistle, when they saw wrongdoing, when they saw something that was clearly a crime, they would blow that whistle to attract the attention of other enforcement people in the area to come and assist them to stop that wrongdoing. And in that sense, the police departments in the United States followed suit, and it was the custom of as well to issue a police whistle. It was much more than just to use for controlling the traffic flow. It was also for that purpose as well, as to stop the wrongdoing. It put the one who's committing the wrongdoing on notice, as well as to gather assistance around to help stop the wrongdoing.
Go ahead.
Maybe another term for some of the people who have come forward now and in the past that maybe have a difference of opinion of what is wrongdoing but might not actually be considered either in the courts as a wrong act. That hasn't been determined yet, but it has to do with their position and on wanting to draw attention to what they say people need to know. Maybe another term needs to be used for those, because it seems that whistleblower doesn't fit that, because whistleblowing has become sort of an honorable thing.
We're talking with corporate whistleblower James Holzrichter on Essential Pittsburgh. Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. Let's go to the phones, and we have Phil in Oakland. Phil, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, what was your question again?
I was simply welcoming you to Essential Pittsburgh, and hopefully you're the one who has the question.
No, I just wanted to comment that I do think that Snowden is a hero, and I also commend the speaker as well for doing what he's done. But what Snowden's done in exposing what has been done by the NSA and the information that they're gathering, he was put in an unfortunate case in which he had to break the law in order to show what he saw was wrong. And I think that that's just even more terrible on his case, because now he has the U.S. government, and he has no protection anywhere by anyone.
Well, Phil, you make a very good point. And James Holzrichter, you seem to be somewhat ambivalent, if not just outright reluctant, to necessarily commend the actions of Edward Snowden. So what about Phil's point that like you, in many ways, Mr. Snowden had no choice?
Well, that's open to interpretation, Paul. I mean, that could very well be the case, because in a lot of these situations, that's what a whistleblower feels. It's a quandary. And no doubt he felt he had to do what he did. And he chose to operate in the arena that he did. I was in a corporate situation, and I did act within the law, and there's a difference there.
Let me give you another example here. Daniel Ellsberg, who famously leaked the Pentagon Papers, he was employed by the Defense Department and discovered things that he felt the American public should know about that regarding the Vietnam War, and those papers were famously published in the New York Times. Do you think that Daniel Ellsberg is a hero for doing what he did.
Well, Paul, we have to remember, too, that we're talking about an event that took place about 40 years ago, and it was a different time and a different era. And you remember what Ellsberg did, too, is that he took his information to what was then a bastion for public knowledge, as it were. People felt different about the press in those days than they do now. And when he provided that the information, it was to an American institution of the day. And those people there at the New York Times, they also weighed about what part of the paperwork should they put in the press and which they should not. And he actually stayed here to face the music. He had the courage of his convictions to face those he was accusing. And now we also look now 40 years down the stream of time, and we see because of that, it stands that test of time. Now, we're talking about an unknown exposure right now of possible information that might have been brought out, and the content of that information, no one really knows what the scope of it is except Mr. Snowden, and we don't even know what he gave and who he gave it to. So it's kind of hard to give the person either the moniker of traitor or hero or whistleblower. It's too early to really to determine that.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Chris in Regent Square. Chris, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. My comment is, I think, exactly what your guest just said, that he's a hero for divulging what they were doing, but we don't know what he's told to our enemies. And if he's given our enemies secrets, then by all means, he's a traitor.
Let me ask you this, James Holzrichter, if Edward Snowden had come to you before he leaked government documents, what advice would you have given him?
What I would have told Mr. Snowden is that there is an affiliation of attorneys. There's over 600 attorneys who are operating within the False Claims Act arena and actually who represent whistleblowers around the country, that when they come forward, and they're very well versed in the federal statutes and all of the protections that are afforded whistleblowing and whistleblowers. And I would have put him in touch with the organization Taxpayers Against Fraud and their co-director, Pat Burns, to talk to them and to find them the proper representation and what they should do next is what I would have done.
Was there another way then? It sounds like what you're saying is there was another way for him to warn American citizens about what the NSA is doing without compromising security.
Absolutely. I feel that he could have operated within the law and sought the proper representation to do so. There are literally hundreds of people who come forward along that avenue and who go through similar to things that I have gone through.
Let's go to Nathan in the North Side, who wants to join the conversation. Nathan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi there.
Hi, Nathan.
Yeah, and I think I just sort of am piggytailing a little or feedbacking on that a little bit in that, you know, I really don't necessarily think some whistleblowers understand the ripple effects and how, you know, this affects security within our country and our citizens and diplomats and other people in other countries that, you know, it may seem laudable at the time, but I don't know that they're always really thinking true big, big picture, and that sometimes they might not know everything. They just know their component that they're, you know, blowing the whistle on. But I don't think people always take into consideration the big picture and the ripple effects that it could have.
Well, that's a good point. And as we wrap this up, James Holzrichter, what do you think will happen to Snowden?
Well, that's hard to say. That's hard to say. It depends on whether or not he is granted asylum to wherever he happens to be traveling to and whether how aggressively he's pursued. And the issue that I speak about, too, is about helping whistleblowers who find themselves in this quandary. They can also find that's contained in A Just Cause, which is available at my website, JamesHolzrichterConsultancy.com.
James Holzrichter is a corporate whistleblower who has written a book about his experience called A Just Cause, a true story of courage, hope, and the integrity of the American dream. He joined us by phone from the Chicago area. James Holzrichter, thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, thank you so much, and to your listeners today for their comments and their concern.
Coming up, is it possible for terrorist cells to use the internet undetected? We'll explore the dark web. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.